Welcome to Fireside Financial. Together, Joe Curry and Regan Schiller offer and discuss insights and advice on all aspects of retirement planning. So grab a cup of coffee or tea, sit back and join us by the fireside as we explore all the topics related to planning for your retirement.
Hey, Joseph, how's it going today?
It's going great, Regan.
Yes.
I'm excited to get another episode in the books here.
Yeah, absolutely. Me too. And I think our listeners are going to enjoy this topic. As you and I have mentioned, we've come across these types of questions. Well, it seems to be like a common question, and that is, how do I draw a retirement paycheck? Or how do I create income streams in retirement? Or where does my money come from in retirement? Or which bucket do I grab from first? How much? And these are very common questions amongst almost all Canadians who are close to retiring. And so today we're going to go into that topic on a higher level and touch on many different points of consideration when talking about how to create a retirement paycheck.
Yeah, exactly. This is one of the most common types or generalization kind of questions that we get. And it makes sense because the game kind of changes in retirement, right? So up to retirement, you know, you're just told, put money away every month or every week, whatever it is, invest it, let it grow. And then one day you're going to need that in retirement.
Yeah.
But then you get to retirement, what do you do? Or how are you making that actually become an income stream or a paycheck for you?
Yeah. And I think one of the things to talk about on that note, what you're talking about, is just the overall mental transition that you'll go through with retirement with respects to your income. Like you said, you've been conditioned to save money, put money away, and it's been done for, you know, the majority of your adult life. You've been doing that saving up for the moment of retirement. And then when that time comes and you now got to withdraw money out of your accounts, it can be overwhelming and somewhat of a, it doesn't feel natural per se to start drawing money out of your portfolios. And that's something that's real. And I think our listeners or people going through that stage have to understand that. And that's where talking to an advisor, if you have one, or even if you had a retirement coach of some kind to express these feelings to, because you are going through a transitional phase. It does require a bit of mental gymnastics, you could say, to ease into it or to get into it, to find your new groove.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a paradigm shift that needs to happen. And it's not just the fact that you've been saving and now you're going to turn this into a paycheck. And this is harder for really good savers too, right? So the better you've done saving, the harder it's going to be for you to start taking money out of there. But then you also have to coordinate with these other income sources, which we will just start, Rico, by touching on those other income sources. So just kind of top of mind, other places we could be getting income in retirement would be like pension plans. So we could have defined benefit pension plan where, you know exactly what your paycheck is. You're going to keep getting it every month through your retirement, just like you did where you're working, which is great if you have that option. More and more now we see the defined contribution plan, which is more like an RSP really, right? Where our employer is kind of matching to an extent what we're putting in there. We're responsible for those investments. We, as the employee, are taking on the risk of what happens with those investments. Mm-hmm. And then just like an investment account or your other savings in retirement, now you need to put that into something or make the account somehow create a paycheck for you. And there's a couple of ways that can happen. So the two types of pensions, then we have primarily the two Canadian government benefits, one you contribute to, your Canada Pension Plan or CPP, and the other one you get basically for living in Canada is your old age security and your portfolio, of course, which we started talking about. Any other ideas or thoughts about where people might be getting income in retirement, Regan?
Well, there potentially could be rental income.
Yep.
They might have, maybe there might be retroactive pay that they'll be receiving potentially in that first year after they left their employer. There could be annuity incomes, which we can talk about in a bit if that fits into most people's retirement income. But yeah, that would be the majority of it, right? Of course, there'd be the registered income and potentially non-registered investments, like you mentioned, that you'd draw upon in retirement. I do want to touch on one thing with the pension plans that you brought up.
Sure.
You mentioned that we're seeing more and more defined contribution pension plans, or sometimes it could also be labeled as a registered pension plan. They are becoming more and more common. I just think there's something important there to note for our listeners. If they are dealing, if you are an individual with a DC or an RPP plan, when you leave your employer, essentially you're going to have to transition that account into what's called a locked-in registered account. So, and again, we're not going to go super deep on this, but I think a very important strategy to consider on your locked-in registered account when going into planning your retirement income is that a locked-in registered account, when you want to take money out of it monthly, it's now going to convert to a LIF or a lifetime income fund account. So the thing with the LIRA or LIF accounts is that there is minimums, like the RSP, there's minimums that you have to take out on a yearly basis at certain ages. And one of the key differences is that there is a maximum amount on your LIF accounts that you can draw out on an annual basis, and that's based on your age. So a little bit more restricted than that of a RIF account. So when it's converting from a locked-in registered account to a LIF, depending on your province, but for the most part, you're going to have an opportunity to move half of that account into a RRSP account. It's going to be a tax-deferred move, so it doesn't matter if you have the room or not. It can go into the RRSP. Now, what I would typically do then is that now LIF account, that's going to be the first place that I'm going to start drawing income from for our clients. And I'm going to be doing the maximum amount out of that on a yearly basis, simply because there's more restrictions around it. So it usually doesn't increase the retirement success. Like it almost has like almost a nil effect on your retirement success, but it doesn't account for, we've added flexibility into your retirement plan so that you wouldn't have had before.
Yeah, that's like the exact same process that we would follow and the way we'd want to set that up as well. Because even if you're going to want a more regular paycheck through retirement and you could just keep it all in a LIF, like there's no point because you don't know what the future is going to bring when you're going to need more of a lump sum. So why not have that flexibility when otherwise it's going to be treated the same as far as how you invested and the tax treatment around it, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's something to really take into consideration. With annuities then, so have you been dealing with annuities a lot in your practice, or have you been asked about it, or is it?
Yeah, so it's not something we're doing much of, but it is something that coming up a little bit more. I mean, I've done some education workshops recently, and it's a question that comes up. And the reason that it's coming up more now than I think than it has maybe a couple of years ago is because there's a little bit more interest now, right? We have higher interest rates. So essentially, the reason that we're talking about this is a potential income stream is, and this could be non-registered, this could be a registered like within your RSP or RIF. But at the end of the day, what we're doing, if you buy an annuity, is you're taking some of your money, a lump sum of money, and giving it to an insurance company in exchange for most likely a paycheck for life, mm-hmm. right? And so some of the upsides of that are probably obvious, is you're not going to outlive it, mm-hmm. right? Because we don't know how long we're going to live. So it kind of solves that longevity issue. But one of the main issues that a lot of people have with it and why they don't go and do an annuity is because they lose all the flexibility of their money. So they can't access it if they need it. Their family's not going to get it when they pass away. So it's very restrictive. You're kind of like, in a sense, you're buying a defined benefit pension plan. Mm-hmm. But most people really don't like that idea of giving up the optionality and the potential to pass on those assets to the future.
Yeah, I think that's one of the bigger points there, is understanding that that money is gone. You've given it up for an income. It's not adding to your net worth, essentially. It's adding to your income planning. You know, in the past where I found in a few instances with clients, one in particular sticks out in my mind, but so they were retired, or they still are retired, sorry, but they're wealthy. They had a decent amount of investments saved up and they didn't really have that big of a lifestyle, no liabilities, but the wife really struggled with market ups and downs. And they were moderate conservative type investors. So there wasn't large swings in there, but she was an individual that would log in every day, look at her account, like stress if it dropped a little bit or if it went up. And this really, it kept her up at night. And she had made a comment, like she said, I wish I was just like my sister and had a pension income. At least then I know I would be able to put food on the table or pay my bills. And that got me to thinking for this particular client was they were business owners. So that was their windfall of money.
Yep.
Is that we just took a chunk of that for an annuity that would cover off their cost of living, like the main, like food, heat, power, water, all those things. It didn't have a negative effect on their retirement plan. It was actually a positive thing because it added some stability, I guess, into it. And they also, they didn't have beneficiaries that they were concerned about leaving money behind to. So it made it a little bit more easier, I guess, for them to do.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And I would call that like creating an income floor. So understanding it, like what's the minimum amount of expenses that I'm going to have forever. So taking care of those necessities, right? So like kind of creating an income floor around that. Mm-hmm. And so for a lot of people, they're going to have that income floor when they look at their Canada Pension Plan, their OAS, maybe if they have a defined benefit pension. But for someone who maybe has a little bit higher expenses than what the CPP or OAS is going to cover, they don't have that pension. If that gives them the confidence even to be good investors with the money that they do have invested for more of the lifestyle spending, then there's absolutely nothing wrong, I don't think, with creating that floor.
Yeah, as long as it's not all of your money, all of your investable assets going into annuities, I think that would be, well, potentially very damaging in the event of some sort of emergency requiring a lot of capital.
Absolutely.
Do you have a lot of your clients, and we're talking about income planning, and this came up yesterday actually with clients, they're retired now 3 years, but the future conversations of when they would downsize their house and or potentially rent and then use the profits to invest and create more of an income for them in retirement. Is that something that you deal with a lot?
Sometimes. I mean, we have some clients who have sold, decided to rent and create some income. We've also used kind of home equity line of credit as a bit of a, almost like we'll call it a lifestyle / long-term care insurance policy. So what I mean by that is, you know, maybe we have a whole bunch of equity in our home and maybe we're getting by in retirement, but when some things are coming up that are just not expected, it, like we just don't have the additional cash flow to do it. So in those cases, we've used the home equity line of credit as a bit of a tool where we're willing to, we need a new furnace. Well, we're going to take the $4,000 off the line of credit and we'll let that live there. Obviously, we're balancing it. What are our state goals and legacy goals, things like that. But for someone who's kind of tight on that cash flow, if they have $800,000 of equity over here that they can access, and when they pass away, if they've had to throw $5,000 on there and $10,000 here or there, you know, every other year, something like that, and eventually they want care to come into their house so they can stay in their house longer if they need that later on. Yeah, we're putting some debt on that equity. But on average, just like stock markets, I mean, the housing market has probably gone up over time. So we put some debt against the equity there. But when they pass away or when they do have to sell, I mean, there's still lots of equity to take care of the debt and leave lump sum some afterwards. So we've kind of used the home equity as a tool like that when people want to stay in their home.
Yeah. Another good point with the home equity, and I don't know if we've mentioned this before in the past, but it is a good exercise, is that if you are coming upon retirement, so you're still working and you did have a lot of equity in your home, getting a home equity line of credit while you're working is going to be much easier than doing it while you're retired. And if you're an individual that can handle having the availability of the line of credit available to you, and you know that you're not going to, I guess, use it for the wrong things, if you will, then it's obviously a great strategy. If you're the individual that you know that that would be too tempting, then you may want to rethink that strategy or at least put some sort of cap on how much you would have available to you. But as a tool in retirement, where I've seen it be very helpful, was when kids come to mom and dad and they need some money. They need 10 or 15, 20 grand, whatever the case may be, for whatever emergency or need that they have in their life. And it could be many different things. In an instance where, particularly in a down market, so maybe it was December of 2023, right? Using the money from the line of credit in the meantime, while you wait for your portfolio to recover, could be very beneficial versus taking money out in a down market. So maybe wait till you've recovered from a correction. And then when that's happened, you could peel some out of the investment account to pay off the line of credit if you wanted to. So that's another emergency tool that it could be used for.
Yeah. I mean, like we were talking about before, it just gives you flexibility, right?
Absolutely. And then I think, you know, the other sources of income to consider would be your tax-free savings accounts, you know, which I think can be very beneficial for a lot of different reasons. So taking money out earlier from your RIFs and things like this, or a bit more every year to put into the tax-free savings account in the future, if you do need additional income for whatever reason, if you have equity built up in that tax-free savings account, using that as an income stream or a supplementary income stream in retirement is very beneficial in a sense that it's not going to increase any taxes payable for you. And it's, you're not going to have a risk of, it's not going to potentially put you in harm of OAS clawback.
Yeah. And the other thing you can use it for is kind of like the line of credit piece. But if something kind of an emergency comes up, then you need some lump sum. You can take the money out of there, they're paying tax. Where if it's in your RIF or RSP and you try to pull money out of there, you have to pay a bunch of tax. So you might be better off, even if you want to keep money in those tax-free savings accounts so you get that tax-free growth, you can take the lump sum out of there and then you can replenish it over a few years out of your registered investment so you don't get that big tax hit all at once.
Yeah, at all once. Yeah, exactly. I think too, a lot of these strategies, like we're talking about basically income planning for retirement, we sound like a broken record, but it's very much the truth, is all of these things that we talk about, it all depends on your unique situation. And there is no one size fits all when it comes to a retirement plan. And that's something that, as we speak here, I really want our listeners to understand that, that these are ideas to think about or how we've seen it be effective, but there is also other factors that are going to come into the picture before making those decisions.
Yeah, for sure. One of the other things we touched on briefly was CPP and OAS, but just thinking, being intentional about those income streams and decisions on when to take that income. I know we've talked about this in the past as well, but I still, like week after week, I get people telling me, you know, they took their CPP because their brother-in-law told them they should take it at 60 or, or whatever it is, but they're looking at how does that fit into our situation. And so the financial planning, FE Canada has done some research on that, right? And so one of the things that they identified is if you wait from age 60 to age 70 and you just look at your, let's just say this is a female who makes it to age 65 And then so from age 65, we're just looking at average life expectancy. So if you make it to the 50th percentile.
Yeah.
So, you know, you live longer than half the other 65-year-olds your age. You don't live as long as the other half. The difference between taking it at 60 and 70 is roughly $150,000 in lost lifetime income by taking it early.
Okay.
Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yep.
Right? So in other words, if you waited to 70 to take it over your lifetime, you would have received an extra additional $150,000 of retirement income in your lifetime, right? So again, that doesn't mean that everybody should wait to age 70, but the decision you make, you want to be intentional about it. You don't want to just make it based on a feeling. You know, you want to see how that fits in your situation and what you need to make the most of your retirement.
Yeah, literally just had that same conversation Monday with a client. This recording's on it's Thursday today, I think. Yeah, it is. But Monday of this week, I had a meeting with clients and the plan was that at 65, the wife would take her CPP or start her CPP. And she's 64 now. And her friends are telling her like, oh no, take it right away because you got to get all the money that you can out of it. And my comment to that was, well, you're playing the mortality game then with that theory. Like you get take it early so that you get it because when you pass away, even if you don't have a spouse, the money's gone essentially, right? But in her particular case, 65 was the like optimal. Any longer that she waited, it was negative. And any sooner she took it, it was a negative effect. But at 65, it had the most positive impact on their retirement plan.
Yeah.
So again, it just goes back to it all depends, right? I've had lots of times where it's makes sense to defer when I put all the factors in and then I just play around with taking it at 63, 62, 61, 65, you know, a husband, wife, and I never go into it thinking it's going to be at this age they have to take it or this is going to be their best time because, yeah.
Yeah, you have to look at the situation exactly.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right. Anything that you think we need to add to this piece, Regan?
No, I think, you know, some things to consider when you are doing income planning for retirement. Obviously, locking down your expenses and knowing your expenses and knowing yourself and how you spend your money. That's really your first step, in my opinion, with doing income planning for retirement, because that's your cost of living. That's why you're saving money so that you can maintain that standard of living. So it's not that I would encourage people to feel like they live on a budget, but just be truthful with yourself on how much you're going to be spending in retirement on your lifestyle. Step two, when you're creating your income plan around that, obviously you want to maintain a good amount of cash surplus or emergency money on hand, if you will, 3 to 6 months, typically what I would recommend, 3 to 6 months of expenses.
Yep.
So then when you start doing your withdrawal strategies from all the different buckets, when to take it at age 65, all that kind of stuff, that's really what you want to make sure is that you're maintaining your cash flow to maintain that standard of living. And then looking at taxes, right? What strategies are going to reduce taxes or what withdrawal strategies are most optimal for your lifetime tax payable. And then finally looking at your net worth, both now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, and also when you pass away or your estate value, if that is important to you, just maintaining that you have cash flow, you're optimizing your plan by paying the least amount of lifetime tax payable if possible, and also ensuring that your net worth is maintaining or growing with those plans.
Yeah. Well said.
Yeah.
Thanks, Regan.
Thank you. As usual, those are my three big ones that I look at when I'm doing a retirement plan, those three key benchmarks. And that's a good litmus test, I think, to each individual strategy and the plan and the effects that it would have.
Yeah. And I mean, depending on your situation, when you look at your cash flow needs, look at the income sources you know you're going to have, like the guaranteed ones. So look at your CPP, your OAS, if you have a pension, and then see how much that covers. But then that's going to identify the gap that has to be taken care of by your portfolio, right? And so without getting into the optimization of government benefits or taxes or anything like that, you can see, are you close to meeting your goals?
Yeah.
And if you're nowhere near it, then you know you need to go back to the drawing board. You're going to work longer, save more, live off of less. What is it? Kind of figure out, do you want to get to that ballpark? And then you really want to dive into, okay, now how do we optimize? Like you said, how are we going to be most tax efficient to meet these goals?
That's right, yeah. And I think another thing that I find, I mean, I don't find it surprising, but clients often who are after like 3, 4, 5 years of retirement, I got this comment yesterday actually from a client. He says, you know, I log in and I look at my stuff and my wife's stuff every day. And, you know, I know we're taking this $6,000 a month out combined between the two of them. That's roughly their cost of living.
Yeah.
He's like, I see us taking money out, but the accounts are staying at the same values when we started retirement. And actually, they've grown a little bit since we've retired. And I think people are often surprised that when you do it right and you do the optimal planning with your situation, oftentimes that is the case, that the individual's net worth after retirement doesn't necessarily go down. It, in a lot of cases, it'll maintain or see an increase in value as you move forward.
Yeah, and that really depends a lot on the sequence of returns, right? Are we getting good returns early in retirement or bad returns? But if you have a plan and you're patient through those ups and downs, then yeah, it's quite likely. I mean, the idea is we don't know how long we're going to live, so we don't want to see anything going down too quickly, right? We need to maintain.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I think that touches on a lot of good talking points that I'm sure we can in the future expand on if we get some questions around it. But I think that covers off income planning in retirement. So I will say goodbye today and look forward to our next episode.
Thanks, Reagan. That was great. Take care.
You bet. Take care.
Investment services are provided through Matthews & Associates Investments of Aligned Capital Partners Incorporated, an approved trade name of Aligned Capital Partners, Inc., ACPI. Only investment-related products and services are offered through ACPI/Matthews & Associates Investments of ACPI and covered by the Canadian Investor Protection Fund. Tax planning, financial planning, and insurance services are provided through Matthews & Associates. Matthews & Associates is an independent company separate and distinct from ACPI/Matthews & Associates Investments of ACPI. Matthews & Associates are not licensed tax professionals, and you should consult with your tax advisor before acting on any recommendations.